Hello and welcome to the Zeitgeist 19 podcast, curating the spirit of now through the lens of art and sustainability. Your hosts are Farah Piriya-Cohen and Elizabeth Zhivkova. Today, we are joined by Jakob Kunz Steinsen, a visionary Danish artist blending VR, video games, and immersive 3D environments to tell environmental stories. From turning Berlin's Berghain into a digital swamp with Burl Burl, to collaborating with BTS and Arca, Jakob's work, featured at the Venice Biennale and right now at Foundation Weiler, reimagines nature in groundbreaking ways. For this season, As Above, So Below, we are proud to partner with One Ocean Foundation to explore our connection to the planet. We dive into how Jakob's digital realms bring us closer to nature, his take on art as a force for change in uncertain times, and what's inspiring his latest projects. Let's get started.
Hi Jakob, it is such a pleasure to have you here with us at As Above, So Below series, especially with the opening of your glorious immersive installation Psychosphere at the Cisterns Unique Space in Copenhagen. Your work beautifully embodies environmental storytelling through VR, video games, sound and immersive 3D environments. Can the digital realm bring us closer to nature?
I'm very happy to be part of this podcast and to meet you and everything. So yeah, I mean, for 10 years I've been working with field biology, natural historians to make different virtual projects that always try to let people enter a kind of concept or perspective on the natural world that we know exists, but that's very hard for us to perceive as humans. So that's kind of the core role of why I work with digital technologies, because, you know, you can occupy the perspective of another animal, you can change scale, you can go underground, you can go into a plant, then you can fly, then things can go fast, things can go slow. So a lot of the things that we know about how the natural world actually works and how different species and elements connect in an ecosystem is very difficult for our, you know, own human bodies to perceive. So that's why I really use these digital and immersive technologies, because they can allow us to hear things we normally can't hear. They can allow us to move in ways that our physical bodies cannot, and see into places and at scales of life that, you know, that we otherwise cannot access. So that's why I use these technologies. Another reason is also that I have a bit of an ambivalent relationship with a lot of digital technologies. Like, they are so omnipresent. They exist all around us. And, you know, most of my work actually takes place outside. I join field biologists when they go to study different biomes. I join their teams and I go to record and digitize and everything. And, you know, part of me feels that we have, you know, too much technology in the way that we now perceive the world. But on the other hand, it also means that it's a very viral, powerful medium where suddenly you can introduce a new perspective on the natural world to thousands of people in one go. So it's also enabling to kind of transfer these new stories and perspectives from environments directly to people. So that's why I'm using these tools like virtual reality, video games, AR, apps, installations. My work always changes formats depending on the specific context.
Building on Elizabeth's question and your discussion of spending significant time in the natural world where you take a hands-on approach, I was wondering, in today's era of uncertainty, distorted truth, and environmental disruption, do you see the role of art and the artist as an active agent of change and transformation?
I think increasingly I've come to feel that there's a very unique role for art. So the past year I've been participating more in like interdisciplinary context where you both have like policymakers, lawyers, environmentalists, people in green finance, activism in one room. And I feel that most of us in each of our fields exist in relative bubbles, speaking to our same community. So the more I've done that, the more ironically I feel that there's something really important in trying to stay as true as you can to what you feel and think as an artist or as a person. So it's sort of like the more I actually engage directly with policymakers or activism and environmentalism, the stronger I feel that there's a really strong need for art, in the sense that it allows you to view some of these issues and themes of climate change, of, you know, new relationship to natural environments, in ways that are very difficult to put into words, but somehow resonates with your body, your emotions, your psychology. And the more time I also spend in these contexts, the more I feel there's something more spiritual, poetic, and sensory missing, the way that we engage with a lot of the issues of the climate. So yeah, I feel it has a really unique role. What that exactly is, I'm not entirely sure, but I feel stronger and stronger that there's a purpose, for example, for me, a lot that I do, to myself, like, right? Like, I really feel more and more motivated to really go hard at these very difficult aspects to explain. When I, like, right now I'm working on creating kind of visual worlds and sensory spaces of the deep sea. So this is like a very remote realm for us, but it's also where all life originated. It is like the newest frontier of like environmental science, but it's also the newest frontier there because people want to mine it as fast as people want to protect it. So there's kind of like this battle going on now of making the public, making them appreciate, maybe making them see, making them feel relationship with the deep sea, just like they feel to a forest. Because the faster you can do that, the more, you know, you can kind of create an incentive in people's minds that the deep sea is worth to protect and not just mine, right? And this is happening right now. And I really feel as an artist that there's something really strong there. That is very hard to kind of just rationally explain. Why should you protect the deep sea? It's like there's something really emotional, psychological at stake that can allow us to connect to it. So I hope that makes sense. It's like I feel more and more actually that there's a true purpose in art in these contexts, but I think it's important not to just kind of illustrate things for science or policymaker through art, or require for an artist to, you know, let's say more rationally change one-to-one how people behave or think, because that's what other people are already doing. So I think it's kind of about having a constellation of environmentalists, policymakers, artists, lawyers, and everything in the same room, and let each do what they do best, but do it together and kind of discuss internally. And the role of the artist in that is to really stay true to these perspectives and philosophies and emotions that you can kind of work with as an artist and share with people.
Thank you, Jakob. Indeed, deep sea is our most precious untapped resource. As our listeners perhaps know, about 80% of the deep ocean remains unexplored. And urgent issues such as the extraction practice of deep sea mining risk causing severe and potentially irreversible damage to the deep ocean and to the marine life that calls it home. You often work in collaboration with various biologists, scientists, writers, composers. From your personal experience, do you find that cross-sectoral interactions drive innovation and creativity?
Yeah, really big questions. Okay, one thing, for example, I think I first explained like how I work and then some of the reflections related to the question. So like, for example, this deep sea project I'm working on now. So for 5 years, I've been recording underwater volcanoes. So some of these I've gone on my own with a technical diver, Federico from Italy, who found one of like four known places in the world where you can, just with normal scuba gear, dive in the top of an underwater volcano. So it's like relatively accessible. So that's my own body in the field with someone who studies and knows that environment, who kind of shows me a place that I otherwise cannot access. I don't even know it exists. I don't know what it sounds like. I don't know what it looks like. So when I work with these field biologists, I try to find I try in the beginning of a process, they lend me their kind of ears and eyes. You know, it's like they allow me suddenly to see something I didn't know existed before, and that then becomes core part of my artwork. So that's a very like emotional, embodied, one-to-one relationship with the environment. But then I also work with much more like remote, kind of large-scale technological infrastructure sometimes. So when you think about the deep sea, it's like, okay, so I went diving a few of these places on my own. But then when you really go deep, like many kilometers down, you need a robot. So I'm also working with this vessel called Rev Ocean in Norway that this summer was out documenting newly discovered underwater volcanoes between like 2 and 4 kilometers in the deep using a robot with this giant ship over the summer. So suddenly your relationship with the environment becomes this huge instrument, this big remote structure, you know, where suddenly you're looking at this place in the natural world, but there's a giant science expedition, there are all these tools, there are all these instruments, and suddenly things become very remote to you and very difficult to feel connected to. So then, as an artist, I have two different scales of data. I have like my own from my body, from my eyes, that someone like one-to-one went and showed to me, which is very emotional, very psychological. And then I have the more remote, large apparatus, big kind of almost like industrial technological view of a place. And then I try to like fuse them together and let them contrast with each other so that the audience kind of senses and feel the difference on this very big remote sense thing and something very embodied and emotional. So you kind of start feeling these different scales of sensing a place. So yeah, I always try to like have like multiple ways of sensing one place, and then through these digital technologies, that's a very powerful thing about these tools, is that you can merge together multiple perspectives into one thing. And that's something fairly new. Like you can't really do the same with a video camera. You have to like cut, you have to like do all these things. Or with these virtual tools, you can literally morph and mix things together. So you get a kind of new perspective on reality.
I'd love to dive deeper into your creative process. In one of your interviews, you spoke about making your artwork from field trips to finishing in the studio, which was fascinating to hear, and I'd love if you could share it with our audience. You just mentioned some aspects of it, I guess, but I'd love to explore it further.
I think today, right now, that we have, this is something I've also talked to several scientists about, that is like, we have too much data. In the sense that we have this phenomenon in Western society of like accumulating data and naming things, and then we believe that that knowledge will transform how people act or change the world. But the reality is that we have way more data than can ever be accessed even, and it just keeps being accumulated and doesn't really change people's mind. So as an artist, as part of my practice, is like I kind of enter this ocean of data with natural history museums, with teams of field biologists and everything. But then by start navigating that data more emotionally. So like I try to find, like I did a project in southern France, for example, in something called the Camargue. It's a big wetland. It's a big wetland conserve there. And I worked with this biologist, Patrick, that has been working there for 30 years. And in the beginning, when I met him, he takes like, which is very typical for scientists when you work with them in these places, he asks like, what do you want to know? He asked like very formal, kind of like looking for specific data that I need. But as an artist, I don't know what I need from the beginning. I want to over time for him to show me something that means something very personal to him and very emotional from all that data and all these studies and having documented this wetland for 30 years. And so it took a few weeks, but then one day he takes out his camera and then he feels very confident, and then he just on his to be himself, and then he wanders off away from me, and then he starts photographing these little bubbles in the water. And then I ask like, what is this? Oh, it's this little plant life that exists in these bubbles in the mud, and he's really fascinated by it. And then I create an entire artwork where his kind of very passionate relationship with this material becomes a key part of this big installation and artwork and VR and everything. But when I start the project, I'm just usually introduced with like these massive data sets. And you're met with like a very kind of rational, logical mindset. But typically these field biologists also has a much more personal emotional connection with these environments. But through like scientific disciplines and the way that we've set all this up, that is not something that's typically shared. So there are all these ways of connecting with all this data that people never see. And so for me as an artist, just the way what I'm interested in, I try to find these little pockets of more strange species, stories, sounds, plants, animals, fish, that at first no one would really show you because it doesn't have kind of like a rational scientific value or something. So in my practice, I kind of navigate through these archives. And then over time, I get sound recordings of different species. I 3D scan like different specimens, plants, beetles, fish, rocks, whatever. And then over time, I kind of get a palette of things, a little bit like when you make a musical composition. I have like 30 sounds. I have 30 specimens. And then that's from the kind of data sets that's based on what exists. And then I go into the environments as well. And sometimes I spend weeks or several months there. And then over time, again, I find things, a leaf, a beetle, some soil. I don't know. Just it. I can never really say what it is until I start the process. But I end up kind of finding something that I can digitize and 3D scan. But typically I look for something that I basically don't know exists until you're in the environment. Like there's so much life and so many forms that we tend to forget now. Because like when you see documentaries, when you see scientific studies, they go for like the clear story, the perfect example, the best case study to prove some kind of point, you know? But the natural world has all sorts of rules and funky shapes and colors that that I think we're kind of forgetting. So that's what I look for. And then back in the studio, after I worked with the field work and the archives, then I kind of merge it all together over time. And I put it together in a way that it sort of feels sensory and bodily connected to some of these concepts of reality that actually scientifically exist. So an example is, I did another project in 2001 about wetlands around the city of Berlin with the Natural History Museum there. And one of the scientists told me that, oh, the peatlands have high electricity in the soil. So it's like he's saying that the soil is electric, but and then you look down at it with your eyes and you're like, that makes no, like your body is like, I have no way of connecting to that knowledge. But then as an artist, you know, then it's sort of like I can animate the soil. So it starts kind of pulsating, moving. And then to the audience, it feels that it's alive. Then it feels like it's electric, right? So with these virtual tools and as an artist, I can sort of create that connection because many of these instruments we use to examine climate change in the natural world, you know, it's like ultra high precision, very instrumental technologies. And a lot of that is just super abstract to people. Like right now I'm working with the deep sea and the scientists say that all material, all life originated in the deep sea. And there are these minerals in the mantle of Earth that under high pressure millions of years ago, somehow transformed minerals into DNA. You know, and this is kind of a scientific fact, but as a human body, you have no way of, it's very difficult, look, seeing a picture of this like rock underwater and then imagining that someday that became a fish. You know, you're like, this is very abstract, but with the tools of digital art, I can literally, you know, take that rock, 3D scan it, animate it, give it a shape, give it a sound, give it an animation. So it feels more sensory and kind of tangible to us through color, through sound, through animation, this kind of ritual practice of animating the world, right? So that's what I try to do as an artist. And that's typically the whole process of our project.
My final question, which subject are you currently investigating and why? And what's on the forefront of your mind right now?
Yeah, so right now I'm preparing an exhibition that will open in Denmark, something called the Cisterns. It's the title of the exhibition is Psychosphere. And it's going to open in March. And it's a collaboration with several people. So one is the writer and kind of environmental philosopher called Melanie Challenger. And I had many conversations with her on scientific theories about psychospheres. So instead of looking at like a biome or a natural environment in relation to evolution, which often is kind of more like a rational or kind of linear way of looking at life, a psychosphere is the way that multiple species through their psychology, their psyche kind of interconnect. So it's a kind of abstract thought, but it's a word that you can use to look at an interconnection of species without using the word intelligence. Because when you use the word intelligence, then very quickly you're kind of working with intelligence in comparison to the human mind, which then becomes language, which then quickly becomes English, which then quickly becomes very linear. But that's not how life works, especially in the deep sea. So I'm creating a psychosphere that's going to open in the cisterns. And the biome that I'm focusing on is life at deep sea. So I'm working with this expedition called REV Ocean, based in Trondheim. And they've been out this summer mapping these underwater volcanoes in Norway. So I have like robotic video from robots that I'm turning into 3D models. I have my own field recording that I've done since 2019 of different volcanic walls and vents underwater. And I have different sound libraries for something called TBA21. They have all these sound recordings that they've compiled over many years. Working with the composer, Lou O'Neill. But all of this in the end is becoming like a deep sea psychosphere exhibition that you enter in this space. It's an underwater reservoir beneath the city of Copenhagen. It's 4,500 square meters. It's a huge space. And then you encounter a psychosphere of the deep sea, the origin of life and things inside of you that also connect to it. One thing, for example, is that inside of us, we have something called a hyoid bone in our throat. The hyoid bone is what allows us to form complex words and sing. And that bone originated in a fish 300 million years ago. And it's the same bone today in us. It's the only free-throating bone we have in our body that's not connected to another bone. And it's almost identical to the form it has in fish. It's just in humans, it allows us to kind of sing and form complex words and evocations. And in the fish, it allows us to open his mouth wide so he can chew on things. But literally, we share this bone, you know, with a fish from hundreds of millions of years ago. So it's a project that's also about connecting elements in our bodies, elements in our psyche, and how that over time comes from the deep sea. And it's part of a whole bigger thing that I am doing with TBA21, and they have a whole constellation of people around creating a new narrative about how that's kind of a common heritage for all species in the deep sea. It's not just humans, like all life belongs from there. It's kind of belongs to all of us. So that's what I'm working on now and what I'm thinking about.
Thank you so much, Jakob, for diving with us into your extraordinary creative practice, deep into the psychosphere.
Yes, thank you very much. And I hope that you will come to the exhibition. It's going to run for 9 months in Copenhagen, starting March.